straight into the presentation. The Department's overall budget for 2010-11 has increased by 19%. But this also includes the conditional grant. For the subsequent, the MTS years, the increase has been about 10%. But members need to note that whilst it looks like it's quite a large budget for the national department, in fact, 95% of the total national health department's budget goes towards conditional grants. So the budget for the national department is quite small. Chair, we've given you the breakdown for the different programs and where the increases are. So it's been a very small increase with administration. Most of the increase is in the strategic health programs, and as I'll show you later on, strategic health programs contains the conditional grant for HIV and AIDS, and this is most of the increase that we've received. And we've just given you the percentage increases for the other programs. And for health services, the percentage increase, this is the program that contains the grant on hospital revitalization, as well as the National Tertiary Services grant and the health professional and training grant. The health professional and training grant falls under the program of human resource management. I'm not going to go into the details around that program increase. Next slide.
Which
Chair, could I just clarify? We sent a presentation, the first presentation we had sent through about a week ago didn't have the first three slides. Then we got a message to say that the committee had wanted to get the breakdown of the budget for the national department, so that includes the first three slides. So Member Tabir, you may be missing the first. Do you have copies here?
You have to have copies of that.
Okay,
I'm told, yeah. You get the next copy. For now, let's concentrate on the slides. You may proceed.
Yes, Chair, I'm sure that one of our members from the department can give the Honourable Member a copy, please. Okay. Chair, the next slide gives you a breakdown of the conditional grant allocation for the MTF period, and I will be going through the details of each of these conditional grants. The largest increase, as you can see, is for the comprehensive HIV and AIDS grant, and then I'll talk through the details of the other grants, the forensic pathology services, health professional training and development grant, the hospital revitalization grant, and the national tertiary services grant. The department, we'll go through each of the details of those grants. The department manages five conditional grants, plus one new grant that's been a once-off grant for a disaster response grant on cholera, and I'll just talk a little on that. I think we one of the departments, if I'm not incorrect, with the largest number of conditional grants. And these conditional grants have been part of the health system since 1998. And I've already mentioned that it takes up the largest proportion of our total national budget. So the grants, I've already given you the details of that. But just to say, we are responsible both for Schedule 4 and Schedule 5 conditional grants. So Schedule 4 as members are aware, that it's the allocations to provinces and municipalities to supplement the funding of programs or functions from provincial budgets. But Schedule 5 is a very specific purpose allocation to provinces. And when I talk around the grants chair, it does pose certain challenges dependent on whether it's Schedule 4 or whether it's Schedule 5. We've given you what the allocations are for the different grants, and I'm not going to go through those details. But just graphically, Chair, to indicate, you can see that most of the grants have been fairly stable. Maybe I should just go through each one. National Tertiary Services Grant, which is the largest grant that we've had, has just had an inflationary increase over time. The other grant is the HIV grant, and you can see that there's been a substantial increase in 2011-2012, so between 2010 and 2011. That's because of the announcements that have been made in the new treatment protocols. The health professional and training grant, which is the yellow bar there, I'm not sure whether this will reach, you can see again it's just been a steady inflationary increase. We've also got the revitalization grant, which is project-based, and whilst there has been an increase in the revitalization grant, there have been certain challenges, and I'll talk around that. And then we've got the forensic pathology grant, which is a grant that's earmarked to be tailored off and has been for a very specific purpose. Chair, we've just given you then graphically the allocation of the different grants for each financial year, so you can see the proportion of the funds that we receive. And if you go to the next slide, we then look at each of the grants and what is the purpose of it. So the Comprehensive HIV and AIDS Conditional Grant, as members are well aware, the purpose of the grant is to ensure that the health sector is able to develop an effective response to HIV and AIDS. And the grant is not just for treatment, but supports a range of programs, including prevention programs, voluntary counseling and testing, as well as treatment and care programs such as step-down care. And I've mentioned that it subsidizes the funding for ARV treatment. The way we allocate the grant is basically through the utilization of the antenatal HIV prevalence survey. We do an analysis of what's the estimated share of AIDS cases in the population, and then we look at the population post-demarcation. So this is the criteria that we use in order to allocate the conditional grant. However, the monies that we received from Treasury in the adjustment budget, that was shared equitably between the provinces. We've given you a breakdown of the provincial breakdown for the grant, and you can see graphically in the next slide that the chunk of it goes towards Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal, and I'm not going to go into the details for each of the other provinces. You can also see that the grant has been steadily increasing. Chair, I'm not going to go into details, but for the members, we thought it would just be useful just to give you an indication of the provincial share of these various grants over years, so that you can also see which are the provinces that are increasing and which are decreasing. Some of the challenges we face with regard to the grant is the capacity to fully manage the grant. We've improved capacity at the national level. We are concerned around capacity at the provincial level, both for the financial management, the monitoring and evaluation for data management. But these, you will see we've given a response as to how we're going to be addressing this. one of the challenges that we face, and this is with the number of grants, is some of the compliance issues and the issues around timely submission of non-financial performance data. So some of the remedial action that we're looking at is filling of vacant posts at both the national and provincial level. We have been asked provinces to look at reinforcing the financial management at the provincial level, and we are looking at the information management systems and data collection to look at how best do we get the data back as rapidly as possible and improve on the quality. So this is an aspect that we are addressing. Chair, then the next grant that we have is on the Forensic Pathology Services grant. If members recall, previously the police used to be responsible for some of the mortuaries, and we've now taken over all the medical legal mortuaries from the police services because the intention was to provide a comprehensive forensic pathology service for the criminal justice system. The allocation criteria is very project specific, so according to the project plan, because it depends on where the mortuaries are. For this grant, Chair, we've only received inflationary increases, and the intention was that this was going to be a once-off grant in order for us to modernize and revitalize the mortuary services, and I'm not sure whether revitalize is the correct word for mortuaries, but to modernize the and really improve on the infrastructure for mortuaries. And the intention was that grant was initially we're having discussions with Treasury. We're looking at whether it stops in 2010-11 or 2011-12, but now most indications are it may have to go on to 2011-12. And that's to just get the mortuaries fully refurbished and brought to the standards that's required, and then the provinces have to take responsibility for it. Okay, next slide. We've given you the breakdown then, Chair, of the grant for the different provinces, and again just giving you the distribution of the grant. You can see that again KwaZulu-Natal has the largest share of it, followed by Gauteng, and then Eastern and Western Cape. So I won't go into details around this slide, Chair, because of time constraints. Some of the challenges that we faced is that we are hoping that the project would have gone a lot more smoothly than what actually happened. And the project is still not completed. From the health side, we have requested additional funds for the upgrading and building of the mortuaries. The building costs have gone quite high since we started off with the project, and that led to inadequate funding for it. And one of the ongoing problem with the number of infrastructure issues is the contract management, and numerous problems that we have with contractors where contractors either delay the project, we have huge escalation fees, and that's sort of resulting in court cases. And this is not specific just to the forensic pathology grant. Okay, next slide. The remedial action that we're taking is, again, for, and I'll come to this in my conclusion, but we are improving the reporting mechanisms and systems. One of the aspects that we have discussed with Treasury is to look at the co-funding of the project from the equitable share formula in order to close the funding gap. And recently we've also requested all provinces as well as at national, the minister has asked that we employ engineers who will be able to project manage a number of these projects by looking at what the contractors are doing, whether the process can be speeded up, and just ensuring the smooth flowing of the project. Then the next major grant is the hospital revitalization. The hospital revitalization grant is not just an infrastructure grant. We started off with what was called the hospital rehabilitation and reconstruction grant, where we just looked at infrastructure and the building of hospitals. But hospital revitalization has also got the component of health technology and equipment, because we said no good having a beautiful building physically without having modernized equipment and good working equipment within the hospitals. We've also added the component of organizational and development, so that we look at the staffing needs, staffing norms, and we've added the component of quality of health services. So at the end of it, when we build a new hospital, that hospital is also performing as a fully revitalized hospital. When we look at the hospitals, we also, if the hospital can't be upgraded from its current state, and we encourage that new hospitals are built. So it depends on the state of disrepair for the hospitals. But a number of our new hospitals is completely new projects. And I've also spoken about that the project itself also manages development initiatives. So we look at improving financial management capacities. We look at delegations to the hospital CEOs, etc. The allocation criteria is based entirely on cash flow for the different provinces. We have now also, we benchmarking the expenditure so that we could we can say that for a particular hospital, this is what you should be spending and on equipment, for example, and allocate according to that. So it isn't just with the request from the provinces. We're also trying to ensure that it's aligned with the equity-based approach over the longer term. Because one of the issues is that some of the poorer provinces are not getting, because it was project-driven, we found that there's quite a lot of funds went to certain provinces, and we're trying to put in an equity approach. So this is the allocation for the revised grant, and this is an indication, and you can see that Gauteng got the largest share of the grant, and KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape. Chair, we've given you the breakdown over the years. Okay, and then the challenges is similar to the forensic pathology grant is the management of the contractor by the implementing agent. So this is an issue that we've raised now with the Department of Public Works. And it's something that really, really needs to be strengthened. Of course, our spending does depend on the performance of the contractors, and in a number of instances, the poor performance by contractors have led to poor spending. And then we have an additional problem of some of the rules and regulations. And often when there's budget crises, which impact on the budgets, the cash flow within the province, there's a moratorium that gets put on the payment of the contractors. So, right now, for example, with projected overspends, that even though there's been funds allocated because of cash flow problems, provinces do not have the money to pay contractors. And of course, this leads to problems around escalation, because the contractors, all they do is to add interest onto those bills and benefit from it. Chair, we also, in order to rectify a number of this, we have started the you know, as I've indicated, implementation of norms and standards and benchmarking. And we're looking now at the possibility of uniform designs for buildings so that we don't have to pay architects costs in order to get buildings designed. I've indicated that we're working on the employment of engineers in each province. We already got a person working at National, and we're working very closely with Treasury to improve the financial management of the grant. In addition, Chair, there's an agreement between the DBSA and Treasury and ourselves on utilizing public-private partnerships and exploring the feasibility of those PPPs for the hospital revitalization program. So this is something that we've put that in our conclusion. Okay, the next grant, National Tertiary Services Grant. This grant is to provide funding for tertiary services. 26 hospitals, in some instances, their complexes are funded, and logically, Western Cape and Gauteng receive the largest proportion of the grant because they provide the highest proportion of tertiary services. We've done numerous studies, and the grant gets allocated according to the cost of designated tertiary services. But over and above that, I won't talk about it. But we are looking at possibly new funding methods for some of these facilities. Next, sir. Chair, you can see there's quite a large proportion of the grant goes to Western Cape and Gauteng, and this gives you the proportion to the different provinces. Chair, the National Tertiary Services Grant is based on a service level agreement and not on a business plan. And the output's based on patient utilization. Now, one of the issues that we grapple with is this is a Schedule 4 conditional grant. And part of the problem is that with Schedule 4, the funds are transferred through to the provinces. But we've also got the additional dilemma that, you know, even if we have inadequate reporting, you can't withhold the grant. But also, from a health point of view, these grants fund essential services, and you can't deny the health care to patients. So this is often a problem for us to ensure full compliance with reporting, etc. Okay. But what we are doing is improving the business plan format, and we're working very closely with provinces in order to get the expenditure linked to targets. Then the other grant is the Health Professional Training Grant. This grant is not for training purposes per se, but it's for the extra costs that get associated with the training of health professionals. So the example that I use is a medical student who's learning to put a drip up for the first time, doesn't get it right the first time and may waste a needle. So you have a lot of those extra costs associated with that. But over and above that, we added a developmental component to the grant, where we're looking at funds the development and recruitment of medical specialists in underserved areas. So the idea is to shift specialists into some of the outlying areas so that they're not just in the urban central areas. And then there's the specific allocations linked to the developmental component, but the grant is historically based on the medical student distribution. However, the grant is under review, and we are going to be looking at what formula we do use for this grant. Okay, and this is then again the distribution of the grants. The challenges we face with this grant is similar to the others with regard to compliance. Okay, next slide. Then the last grant chair is a very specific grant that we got for 2009-2010 for cholera. And it's mainly for Limpopo, but also some of the other provinces that incurred costs. So I won't go into too much of detail around that. So overall, Chair, we follow the in-year monitoring system, and submit our reports to Treasury. We're monitoring very closely when we are receiving the reports. And those submission deadlines have been improved on. The other aspects that we're looking at is that for hospital revitalization, for example, if there's non-compliance at the door of this under expenditure, we would write to the province and to Treasury and to say it's our intention to withhold these funds if you don't comply with these conditions. So we've been a lot stricter around the Schedule 5 drugs, grants, trying to make sure that there are interventions in place. The visits to provinces for both support and monitoring has improved, and I will then speak around this next slide. The measures that are put into place national. Now, you know that there's been concerns raised by the Auditor General in previous audits, and we previously got qualifications for this, but we didn't get a qualification now because we have the Auditor General has stated that there's improvement in the monitoring and the management of the grants. We also have received funds from Treasury for a new financial provincial support unit in order to strengthen monitoring and support to the provinces, and not just on conditional grants, but on the overall budgets. I've mentioned already on the legal implications of us withholding some of the grants, but hopefully with the work that we're doing with Treasury, in looking at a new methodology for resource allocation, a lot of these issues will be addressed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I hope members have noted their questions. Authorities will raise that after the next department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. From rural development, in the presentation, we've given you an indication of what has been allocated to us this year. Thank you, sir. Sorry about that. My name is Roziko Anya. I'm the Director General for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, and together with my colleagues, the Chief Financial Officer and the team. This first slide talks to the allocation of 6.7 billion to the department. I'm not going to go to the rest of the program of the programs as indicated in this slide, but the focus is on rural development, the program tree, which is the amount that in this bill you have talked about, which is the 860 million that has been allocated to the department for the new component, the function of rural development. Let me say that we had asked, if you look at the next slide, can you just show the next slide? We had asked for some amounts with National Treasury when we were
indicating, given the new mandate, what is it that we would like to do. We asked for that amount of 6 billion additional amount, but we were given 1.9 billion for what we had asked for. And but we have come to accept that if you go to the previous slide, that this 860, we will have to adjust all the programs and the work that we have to do to be in line with the allocation. So we have so adjusted our strategic plan to be in line with the allocation that has been approved. I just want to raise to indicate that as a department, we do not have any conditional grants. So we do not have a report under that. But the manner in which we implement our comprehensive rural development program, the CRDP, is such that we have got to interact with provinces and municipalities. For example, in the CRDP sites, the pilots that we are running in Moyeshe, in Msinga, in KZN, in Mshonto, in the Eastern Cape, in the Atalawa, in the Free State, we already have areas, for example, of expenditure such as fencing, such as the construction of roads, such as the building of schools and sanitation programs and gardens, agriculture. With some of those, we have had to interact with the provinces, either provincial government or the municipalities, where they need to transfer amounts from our budget has become obvious. Of course, this is our first year. It's a new curve. It's a new learning curve for us in implementing this program. We have had the request from the municipalities or provinces for us to transfer some of those amounts to them, and we said that we are unable to do that because we do not have a framework for doing that. So what we are doing is we are having the business plans and service level agreement around those specific projects, be it fencing or road construction. So when we were looking at the presentation this morning, we immediately saw that we would have a problem with the process of gazetting, for example, if we are going to transfer those monies to the municipalities as they are requesting and to the provinces as they are requesting. We would have a challenge that the framework would not have been there. And the gazetting itself, as it is being proposed today, we think that it would be a difficult process to do that. And by the way, we engage with these various provinces and municipalities. We are not able to determine in advance what the amounts are going to be for those specific projects. They are a product of interaction with the communities where we do a needs analysis as the various elements of government, the municipalities. We go and interact with the communities. They do the prioritization of what is it that they want. They want water, they want schools, they want sanitation. After they have done that, it is then that all of us as the various parts of government, province, municipality, we respond to those needs of the people. It's the nature of the implementation of rural development, being a participatory approach to development. So it would mean then that we would have to do that needs analysis with that specific community and respond later if we're going to follow the Gazette, because it would mean the Gazette would have to follow that project planning period. So what is working at the moment is the business plan and service level agreement approach, but the funds are also used and audited in the hands of the National Department and are not necessarily transferred to the municipalities and to the provinces. That's the current arrangement. But if we're going to do the transfer of funds, this would be a challenge to us. It would result in a delay. Then on the other areas of rural water, the 1.2 billion that Treasury talked about, we have had meetings with the Department of Water Affairs about how to give effect to that intention. We have agreed that for all the households that we are interacting with, whether they have got these houses, like for example in Muyeshe, in Limpopo, we have already built 231 houses in a joint program with the municipality and the provincial department responsible for housing. Those 231 houses, we insist that they should have water tanks, the Jojo tanks for rainwater harvesting. And we believe that as the communities express that need for water, like in Umiyeshe, in the 21 priorities, they identified that water was number one priority. So in such a case where there is no pipe to water, we are saying that these water tanks are going to be critical. So we have interacted with Water Affairs, and we have agreed that we need a joint planning program and approach to deal with such needs as they get expressed with the, by the communities. And also with the Human Settlements Department, we had a meeting 2 days ago where we agreed on the approach on implementing the sanitation program, rural sanitation program, so that we can see how we can improve rural sanitation, especially on the areas where we have got this joint planning with the department. The same can be said with the Department of Agriculture. We are implementing the village school program, which is a joint program between the Department of Education, Department of Water Affairs, and DAF, as well as our department. We are insisting that there must be schools, there must be village school gardens, as well as water harvesting for all the rural schools. So in those programs, this is where we will be able to deal with the grants, the two grants that Treasury talked about, human settlements as well as water. That is all I can say, Chairperson.
Thank you.
and honorable members. My name is Martin Masemola from the Department of Energy, and I'm accompanied by my colleague from the department, Mr. Chris Fontaine.
And the colleagues from the from ESCOM, Mr. Sokopo, and the other colleague, Ms. Nomhula Sachal. My presentation, Chairperson, will be on integrated national electrification program, as well as the grant that the department has, which is the energy efficiency and demand side management. So my presentation will basically be in two parts. Chairperson, I'll just go through and start with the INEP program. Just to give the brief background of basically where the program come from, it just indicates there that it was basically started in the early 80s and later at, it was refined at, by the National Electrification Forum. Access at the time was about 30% and it was funded through the regulator at the time. And then after 1994, obviously the government prioritized this specific program, and in 2001 they took the responsibility to fund the program. And currently, the way it's funded is we have a fiscal allocation, which are mainly Schedule 6, which is direct transfers to municipalities who have got a license to distribute electricity, and we have got Schedule 7 allocation, which is an ESCOM allocation, whereby ESCOM has a license to distribute electricity in rural municipalities, and they do electrification on behalf of those municipalities. Where we are, of course, the marching orders is still on universal access to electricity in South Africa. The specific mandate, of course, of the program, we need to manage the planning, funding, and the implementation process so as to achieve the universal access. We mainly focus on the managing the funding, and we monitor the program in line with those policies and guidelines, of course, and laws that govern the sector. Now, in terms of the criteria that has been used or that will be used for the for allocation of this specific fund, backlog being the biggest criteria. When we allocate this funding, we need to make sure that we are rural biased in terms of improving the status of rural communities. Those areas which were identified as part of the nodal zones, the availability of formalized areas, and this is with respect to the issue of informal settlements and things like that. We need to make sure that the areas are formal so that we can put electrification in. The availability of the bulk funding availability, because this has become a challenge mainly in rural areas where we need to build long sub-transmission lines to access rural communities with electricity. The performance of municipality plays a crucial role because we have got the limited funding, and the work that needs to be done far exceeds the available funds. So if the performance of the municipality is taken into consideration in the allocation of this funding, it becomes key. And we need to integrate, of course, with other programs of government. We're saying this because there's no need of having sometimes houses which don't have electricity. So we try as far as possible to make sure that when houses get built, we need to integrate with that specific program. Those are the backlog figures per municipality. You'll see that we will have the percentage of houses which have already been electrified and the backlog associated with that. You see that KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape basically forms the largest part of our backlog, And the it is also fair, Chairperson, to mention that it is in those areas where we need to build very long and long sub-transmission network, because the area is such that the way it was planned, there was no bulk infrastructure to access deeper rural areas. And it is in that part of the of South Africa where the topography in terms of constructing these lines makes it completely difficult and therefore increase the cost per connection when you do electrification. And that is basically the indication of that specific backlog in the pie chart. So if you have to use backlog as the only criteria of allocating funds, this would be more or less what one would basically slice the pie of what is available. That is our allocation for this financial year, including the next 2 years. So Jefferson, you can see that we also have got the non-grid electrification as part of our program, because in far deeper rural areas, there are areas that really, if you have to extend the lines, you know, it's going to be extremely expensive. So we try to integrate and make sure that we provide other alternative energy sources. And in this case, the only one we have is the solar home system that we are basically doing. And those are our respective allocations per province. And Chairperson, you see, we will have the municipal allocation this side, which is our Schedule 6 allocation, and the our ESCOM allocations as well. And on the right there, you'll see the in terms of the percentages. In terms of with the compliance there, we do have a challenge. Especially in terms of the municipalities specifically requesting funds in line with their respective payment schedule, they provide this as part of the business plan, but during the execution time, things change, and you find that there's a misalignment between their cash flows and the way they said they are going to request funds, and in the manner at which those funds are going to be requested. So that is some of the, in terms of the compliance, some of the challenges. We do have also, in terms of compliance this in, with this specific clause, municipalities, you find that they don't provide some of the reports. We do struggle a bit, and hence it makes it sometimes difficult for us to comply with Treasury when we have to do that, because we rely on them providing such reports. So it poses challenges. I have indicated, Chairperson, that we have some challenges in terms of the reporting. The municipalities not following their own payment schedules. Sometimes we agree, we sign a contract with municipality that they are going to execute such a specific project. 3 months later, when we go to site, we find that they have basically changed the project that we have agreed with them as per the contract. So we sometimes have those challenges. So those, and then they, like we say, that they sign a contract and then change the project after the signing of that contract. So that has been some of our challenges. Some of our mitigating strategies, we would request ESCOM on the municipal side to assist where necessary in terms of implementing this program. And I see now the DORA allow us to shift funding sometimes from ESCOM to municipality if we see there's a risk of significant underspending, so we can be able to do that. We do try to support municipalities in relation to the planning, so making sure that when they identify a project, it is the project that is implemented, it is implementable. We do have regional energy officers who are technical, and they can try to assist municipality in the monitoring of the project, because municipalities implement this using consultants. So you find that sometimes, because they don't have the necessary skills to monitor the project, they have a challenge there. So and I did indicate that the fact that we can prevent underspending by moving funds between Schedule 6 and Schedule 7 will come as a mitigating effect factor. On the part two of the presentation, it is mainly the energy efficiency. This fund was set up to basically deal, Chairperson, with the when we had the energy crisis or energy shortage. So this fund was specifically to assist in helping municipalities to reduce demand, the electricity demand. So last year it was the first time when the municipalities started executing some of these projects. The funds also, we do have both ESCOM and municipal funds, Schedule 6 and 7. Okay, that is basically the mandate of that specific unit within the department. They basically do energy efficiency, and their objective is just to reduce the demand through energy efficiency and demand side initiatives of the program. And their specific focus areas will basically be to do all those that is listed here. And that would basically be the allocation criteria. So they'll basically identify areas which has got to ensure security of supply. They will identify areas, because the issues of 2010, to ensure that in those areas they reduce demand in terms of those initiatives. They would ensure that they target areas where there is high demand as well. If we can, okay. In terms of the allocation, those was the allocation, and we don't have allocation further than these 3 years, Chair, because the expectation is that it was just an intervention to try to reduce and encourage energy efficiency and demand side management. So beyond the 3 years that is there, we would not be able, there would not be any allocation for this purpose. So those are some of the allocations that has already been made. I must indicate that the there will be areas where the area was not identified as a high consumption area. So that funding was specifically targeted to areas where there is a high consumption, and the projects are specifically to deal with a demand side and energy efficiency programs. So those are the funding. Some of the challenges which are not that much different, because the mode of operation that we operate with municipalities, both on electrification and energy efficiency and demand side management, they are not that different. So most of the challenges, they would sort of be similar that we basically experience, and except the fact that because this fund was new to municipalities, they had some delay in signing of the contract with the department, because you find that there was a misunderstanding in terms of which of the subsidy, and they needed more clarity. So those are the things. And in terms of the capacity here, I would refer to not only project management, but the understanding of what one would term an energy efficiency project or demand side management initiative. Okay, those are some of the interventions or mitigation strategies that we would like to have to ensure that at least we can assist these municipalities. The idea is that once this program has run course, we will be able realize some savings or some change in behavior of, in terms of energy efficiency usage using CFLs and so on and so on. So those are some of the mitigating strategies that we are trying to put on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, sir. Now, allow for questions. But first, I would want President Mr. Brown, in your comments, maybe before we start questions, particularly on the challenges raised by rural development. You can also comment on the health.
Thank you, on the rural development side, I mean, the main issue that relates to the bill has got to do with how do you treat transfers made to municipalities. If a municipality is going to render a specific function and it accepts resources from national for those
functions
that you're going to be rendering, those things must be reflected actually
within some kind of gazetted allocation. Any allocation that's made to subnational government must be reflected in that, except for an allocation that will possibly be made in kind. And this is the distinction between the rest of the schedules and Schedule 7, for example. But we will be working with the department to ensure that they regularize all of the allocations that will be going to those specific municipalities. Something else that we will have to engage the department on, Honorable Chair, has got to do with some of the functions that they say they will be undertaking, because it will create problems if a department is now starting to build schools where they sit, for example. You see, so how do we get the synergy across the number of departments going in such a way that we don't have too much overlap around it? So those areas we will take up specifically. On health, I think Dr. Chetty has covered everything. We are actually in engagement with the department. We are going to have a joint MINMEC in the next 2 weeks where we're going to really take the health agenda quite forward. So what is presented there is an actual reflection of our discussion with the department there. On the energy side, we assume that on the demand side management that by the 2011-12 that the program would be concluded. But as the nature of the of how things work, I mean, the budget process in the new year will determine how far progress is and whether it's premature to actually discontinue that program. Similarly with the rest of the other conditional grants, Dr. Chetty spoke, for example, about the forensic pathology grant. So those interactions will continue because the grants continue, but we will find a way of discontinuing them in a way that would make sense. And we will actually report back to the committee on those specific decisions before we finalize those ones. But the rest, we are happy with what is presented. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Honorable De Beer, Honorable Henry, Honorable Matamela, and Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Looking at the presentation of the Department of Health on page 20, referring to the issue of contractors, I just want to request that this department look at the track record of contractors before they engage contractors to go on to the example, the mental health hospital of the kingdom. And still, we passed there yesterday afternoon, members of this committee. And I played a visit there on an oversight visit last year. And escalated from 218 million just trying to pull the figure up to over 700 million. It's a huge, huge implication for the department as well as the Department of Public Works, which is integrated services. So just a caution. And then the brand new hospital in Garish, Kelslovo, Garish Community Hospital, brand new. Ceiling is falling. Yes, I've got the pictures on my cell phone, I can show you. It's an issue to the MEC. I want to catch up to the MEC for help and all that stuff. Just want to bring that under your attention. And then lastly, no question of monitoring. Monitoring tool when it comes to the department and province. Out helping the NCP to do the oversight, yes, 100%. But also the National Department in terms of monitoring the government, the spending, and the outcome. Again, requiring the North State Department for that. We received a disclaimer for 7 years from the oversight.
That's one of the 2 points,
Thanks, Chair. Earlier, Treasury ran us through their responses to the FFC's proposal for last year. And the one regarding the performance of the hospital centered on that state has developed norms and standards to deal with key issues in public health systems. Now, the presenter did deal with that on one of the slides. I think it was, I don't know the number of the slides, but she spoke about the fact that they were moving towards implementing Norton standards. Now, the implication of using the word implementing is that you have developed those Norton standards. Has the department developed them? And if so, where are they? My second question, when the health grants formulas are being designed, is the FSC included in that process? What is their role there? And then lastly, I understand that with regards to the health professional training and development grant, there was a recommendation around 5 years ago that you review the costing of the grant and redesign the grant in line with training needs. What happened to this recommendation? You say you're reviewing the grant now. Are those recommendations the justification for the current review? If not, why not? And if they are, why did it take 5 years to get to the point where you can start doing the review?
Thank you, Chuck. Mine is on the question of the rural development in particular. Linked to the formula, the future formula, which is said to be under review. I was hoping that the issue of backlog finally would be addressed. This backlog on the main are related to infrastructure. Now, I was hoping that rural development would respond to that, but I don't hear it coming strongly around that area, although I see a lot around the Now, the issue of migration to urban areas is also linked to the underdevelopment of rural areas. The question, therefore, is how this is addressing even the rural economy, which has not been attended to in the past, and I believe even now we have not attended to that. So if we can have the clarity around that, because I'm coming from a rural area, and I'm not only speaking from my rural area, I'm speaking to other people too. So the food, funding, which I believe for many, many years has been favored in urban areas, ignoring the root cause of people migrating to urban areas, needs to be attended. And I'm not sure, I've not yet been convinced sitting here that we are doing that. So I want that to come up clearly if it is I've not picked up properly, so that I can be convinced that we are addressing that fundamental issue. Thank you.
Thank you. May I remind members, when you raise questions, you raise for all these committees. Don't think we are teaching in 1 hour. If you have questions for all three, ask questions to all three. Honorable Harris, can you finish your question?
I apologize for that. To the energy department, you've got a column on slide 10 where you talk about backlogs. And my understanding is that there are historical backlogs and then there are new backlogs that develop as communities expand. What is the source of that backlog data, and shouldn't you be looking in between those two originations? And then how much money is owed by Eskom to municipalities, and how did those debts arise? Your energy efficiency program, you've got a target of energy efficiency which is 12% by 2015, and I gather you started the program in 2005. If your target is 12%, what was the percentage when you started, and where are we now halfway through that program? So I'm looking for those two numbers there. And then that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Shepherd. My question on health. There's a hospital which was supposed to alleviate the pressure on Parramatta Hospital, which was supposed to have been finished probably in 2009, I think, all of them. And it was supposed to have been launched in September 2009. That hospital has not yet been finalized. And the structure, I mean, when you look at it, and there was an amount allocated to the construction. I would like to find out if there is an allocation for housing. Will it be a new allocation for it? And then rural development. Your program 4 on restitution. Yeah, I just want to find out about the figures, the figures on restitution and whether the process has been closed. In the past, we heard that the program is just about to close, and quite a backlog of cases which have not been attended. And the budget that has been allocated for restitution now under program 4, on your originally requested amount, will this amount suffice in order for you to round up the backlog? And on energy. Yeah, I'm interested mostly in the sources of energy, alternative sources of energy. Whether there's still research which is being done on the wind turbine and solar system, and how far is the department in respect to those. And just briefly, contingency plan for alternate energy provision.
For
your
focus.
Thank you.
Thank you, President. That's unfortunate that some of this allocation
are made on the basis of population figures in the province. But practically on the ground, everything changes. Now, I would speak to Helen. The training grant, they also allocate it in terms of the provinces and the population. But now, I just want to know how to be correct the situation on the ground that happens. If you allocate small amount to Mpumalanga, and we train with the health professionals, after completing the training, and those health professionals shift out here. How do we correct that situation? Because also the size of the allocation determines the quality of the service to be provided. And if we allocate small amounts to certain provinces, but we don't allocate them strategically, then the kind of intervention that they can make also is small and may not be of quality. I think that's what I just wanted to check. And then the other thing which I'm a little bit worried is hearing the Department of Health wanting to employ engineers. I'm a little bit worried about that. And of course, it looks like the track record of the minister, because when he was in education as well before, he did the same thing of employing engineers in the Department of Education. I don't know what the story, because that direction may call all departments, even in finance or treasury, they may start employing engineers and running around to check stadiums and all this. I'm not sure whether it's a good thing, but I'm a little bit worried because it is taking us in another direction of closing public wells. The question is, when you have got those engineers and you appoint contractors yourself and supervise and complete the building, who takes care of maintenance after that? And you see, then you'll be forced to establish a directorate of maintenance as well. And then it will just go on and on and on and on. I'm not sure, but it is your business, whatever. The rural development. I just want to check, because I'm hearing that they go to need analysis and which informs their project. But then they don't fund the whole thing. They expect municipalities to co-fund and all that. Now I just want to check, how do they link their process with the normal IDP process of municipalities, so that we don't end up with municipalities making projects, but they have to close them up, because now they must transfer funds and fund the rural development project. How is this interrelated, and make sure that there is a smooth alignment? Then with the Department of Energy, I'm worried on the mitigation. I don't hear where the department wants to assist the municipalities, where municipalities are having problems. They are delegating that to ESCOM. Whether ESCOM is your sharpshooter, I'm not sure. Because one should be hearing that the department itself will actually deal with the municipalities. And if ESCOM comes strategically, it is a department that must do so. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, sir. I think another of the states that was being made on the representation program and the grant, I just want to find out if the hospital in core cultural areas, that was the issue of making what we call a plan. In one of the last reasons, you call the hospital, the commercial hospital, the hospital, that is how far are you to determine the priority of those hospitals, I think one of the days got me from the contractors and they said from the special contractor. Another issue of energy. I just want to find out the I've seen your efficiency allocation. Three stages in Kodone, 5 million, in Kumalanga, 8 million, but the form is the issue that rural communities that they have access to electricity. How do you intend giving those communities energy that ensures with the 5 million in Kumalanga? And on rural development, this is one of the key or priority areas of government. And yet I see that they requested 6 billion, they're giving us 2 billion by treasury. I just want to find out from the department and treasury itself. Department, how do they envisage accomplishing all the projects with 1.2 billion? And now, as the honourable said, how do you coordinate with other departments in order to make this available?
Regarding the figures on the population in a province, and I now refer to Northern Cape, Northwest. The situation is confused, inherited from Northwest. But bordering on Pampistad in the border of Northern Cape is 14 villages and 4 in the Northwest province. As they come to the health facilities in Pampistad and Hatchwater, for specific reasons of service delivery. How is the allocation being done? Well, by coming over the border, and they put pressure on the provincial budget of health in the Northern Cape, utilizing that facility, but then the clinics complain in the hospitals we are running out of stock. But when they receive their medication or what the case may be, the service, they go back to the Northwest. Now, we can't withhold service in this sense from the people, the patients coming. But how are you as a department doing the budget allocations into the province? Between 1998 and 2003-2004, the Northwest province owed the Northern Cape in the vicinity of 64 million rand. Services, which was actually now lost, well, it accumulated. But that's what just to give you the example. That's one of the reasons for overspending in that specific problem.
Thank you. Just two questions for me for the Department of Health. There was a call at some point about the reopening of medical colleges. I don't know whether that's going to be your mandate or not. But I'd like to hear your reflections on that. And in terms of this government mutualism, how many are still staffed and when are you anticipating to finalize the issue of those mutualist Department of Health? Department of Energy. That's in addition of what my colleagues have already said. My observation has always been that most people in the municipality literally is known about the Department of Energy and its role in themselves. So much so that each and everything that relates to electricity, whoever has got any complaint, they see Eskom as a relative department or partner. There's always no what is the role of the Department of Energy to ensure that
there is clear understanding of your role, that of ESCOM, and how do you, or what support do you give to this particular municipality, precisely to address some of the challenges that you have mentioned? Because I'm sure you will agree with me that some of the challenges that you have mentioned would relate to lack of capacity in this particular municipality. Some don't even know that they are far that they can access from themselves. Even if such funds are accessed, they don't even know how to utilize them according to the required standards. So how do you make sure as a department that you, what role do you play to give certain support to this particular municipality, particularly those municipalities, the people who are there? Because some of these grants that are available, which also you find that are only accessible to this big municipality. These small rural municipalities, they are not aware. They only know about infrastructure capacity building. Every time you look through their finances, it's only 4 or 3 grants that will always appear. And it's because the departments are not sharing this information with them. So they are pumping money to big cities and municipalities. And that is not perpetuating this underdevelopment of rural areas. It's not helping the situation. That is one thing that we should look into in direction. But energy would have to respond on that. The rural development, I'm still not clear, about whether we are within the right direction of the plans of government. Because some of the grants, you find some of the grants meant for rural development will be administered by the government. Some are sitting in the department itself, some are sitting in another department. But there seems to be a lack of synergy between the departments. And I think most of the contracts are struggling in facilitating that. But I think the pace is very slow, Mr. Brown. That can be fast-tracked. And hopefully, I mean, this is a point where we are now, all of us, as citizens, are able to see as to what will be done where and when, by whom, in all these rural areas, so that these areas are developed as seamless as possible. I don't know if you have some views on that. We can now allow our staff to have to respond.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
The issue that's been raised by Member De Beer around the contractors and who we employ. This is an issue that we also quite concerned on, because if we don't employ the contractors, it's the Department of Public Works that employs the contractors. And in fact, that's part of the reason as to why we employed the engineers. So because we didn't have the ability to look at what's happening with the contracts, and found ourselves in a position in a way there were all these escalations and all the various problems, and so that's why we had appointed those engineers. But I would think that, you know, maybe together with Treasury, we may need to find a system of blacklisting contractors, or, you know, benchmarking them. We just recently had a contractor walking off the job just like that, took all his equipment and left, after we had paid millions, you know, to them, and they just didn't have the capacity. So it's a big problem, and, you know, maybe the committee is something that can look at it. The other issue is around the escalation costs. What we're trying to do is to see, or we're trying to cap what we say escalation costs and variation orders, so that we don't end up just paying more and more for the same project when you should be taking the money to start new projects. And then Chair, I mean, the issue around Khalif Hospital, if you can just please get us those details, we'll send someone in. And again, that's part of the reason as to why we got the engineers, so they can go and check some of these ceilings and stuff that are falling down. And, you know, we agree that the monitoring tool is, but that's what we are currently working on. Can I just answer your other question around how much you've been owed? It's a big dilemma, because in fact some of the other provinces have got, you know, similar concerns around patients who come to them. I mean, because health doesn't have any boundaries. You go to the nearest facility. And we've now had incidents where ambulances stop at the border and don't want to go across because it's another province. And you can't deal in that way, because, you know, an ambulance needs to take a patient to the nearest hospital. So we are having all of those problems. Now, I can assure you that Northwest will tell us that Northern Cape is more just people coming from Northern Cape to them, and Northern Cape owes them so much of money. Or Free State will tell us, where do all your tertiary patients go to? Because you don't have an academic hospital. So all of them are going to Free State and getting treated at Universitas and Pelonomi. So it's an ongoing problem, but maybe it's something that we need to address through the equitable share formula and the new models that we're looking at with Treasury, because this has been a battle for some time.
Yeah. I'm talking about my previous constituency. It's a reality. And also from the room, they're coming to Archwad. And it's an issue. You can't just hold the service 100% correct, but at the end of the day, it's about the funding. That's the issue.
But Chair, also perhaps, I mean, we could have a bilateral with regards to that. Northern Cape has been underspending on some of the grants that we've given them, and you know, that's also been an issue as to whether they were getting too much from the conditional grants. The issue around norms and standards, what I've mentioned here is norms and standards specifically on infrastructure. Just to say, we've developed a whole set of core standards for hospitals and health facilities overall, which relates to quality, patient safety, and it also relates a bit to infrastructure. But over and above that, we've gone further with the hospital revitalization grant. Now, the reason why I'm saying implementing is that whilst we are developing other standards, which building norms and standards, we have got standards with regards to equipment. So we will be able to give you to say, this is the package of services that needs to be in a regional hospital, and this is the equipment that should go with that package of services. So we've been able to match to see where the provinces are buying equipment that's unnecessary or not cost effective. So we're quite correct in saying implementing it, but at the same time, there are further standards that have been drafted with regard to building standards and norms. We do have some existing ones, but we think they're quite outdated. It's R158 that we use for private hospitals, but that's just too outdated. Was the FSC involved in the conditional grant? The FSC, my understanding, and maybe Kenneth can respond to it, looks at what we do and makes recommendations, and then we respond to it, but they aren't intimately involved in those allocations. And then the health professional training grant, yes, there was a recommendation that we review it. We did do a review in discussions between ourselves, the heads of health and treasury. We weren't satisfied with the recommendations that had been made, and therefore that's now been taken to a committee between Treasury, Education and ourselves, which is reviewing the higher education component for health, and the health professional training grant is part of that review. Honourable Member Mutsitsi, I'm not sure which hospital you're talking about, but if you're talking about Zola, then we've completed the Gateway Clinic, and for the Zola District Hospital, there's the contractors who are going to go on site. On site now. Okay. But over and above that, we've got big plans for Krasani Belagwanath, as the President has announced, because through a public-private partnership, we're looking at the total refurbishment, and we're not just looking at one hospital, we're looking at breaking it up into different components, a tertiary hospital, and then a regional and level one hospital, all on one site. So there will be movement. But over and above that, we've revitalized the whole of the trauma and the OPD, and some of those facilities really look good now, but you know, there has been work that has been done there. The issue around migration, the allocation for the health professional training grant and people migrating, just to say, the funds from the grant have been given to employ both registrars as well as specialists in the rural the provinces that don't have medical schools. Now, it isn't there to keep them in those rural areas. But over and above that, what we've done is the rural allowance gets added to. So that's a separate thing. And in fact, a lot of those doctors now don't want to move to the academic areas. They still want to be employed by Mpumalanga because they, together with the scarce skills and the rural allowance, they are earning a lot more than doctors in the urban areas. We have got other mechanisms. The whole idea was to just to make sure that we keep them there. I would agree, though, you know, there's still major challenges. We have to continue to address that. And the issue around the employment of engineers, yes, our ministers asked us that the engineers need to be employed and have asked all of the provinces. And we have got, in fact, the engineer from Limpopo is working at National, and it's shown to be quite effective. But, I mean, the difficulty is because we've been having problems with managing contractors, so that's why we had to necessitate this. And the idea is that we do have a whole unit looking at maintenance because, you know, we get blamed as the department for the lack of maintenance in our buildings when it isn't our responsibility. So that's something that we're taking responsibility for service delivery. And then the hospital in Kwakwa, I'm not certain as to, is that the... Not the Elizabeth Rossman. But it's revitalized. Okay, I'll ask. I thought we revitalized it already. Monopo. Okay, it's on the list. But the priorities get determined by the province. And the province has to determine it according to the state of repair or disrepair from the audit that we did. But then... Yes, so those priorities do get determined by the province. So we should speak to the MEC and the head of health there. Okay, and then the reopening of the nursing colleges. There's currently an audit that's been conducted with regards to the reopening of nursing colleges. So that's been done because a lot of things changed, and so we need to see as to. You know, what can be reopened and how. And all the mortuaries have been transferred to us, so that act took place at the same time. But the problem is that where some had to be repaired and upgraded, that hasn't been made evenly between the provinces. Some provinces have been pretty good, other provinces not as much. So we basically need to improve on the building of the mortuaries, like we have to do with our hospitals. For both the live and
the they will still remain as sub-building.
No, they've been transferred to us completely.
And I think in most police stations, you still find mortuaries. I'm saying we will remain there, but you administer by yourself. or you are closing those at the substations and opening elsewhere in Kings or
It depends on whether we're going to replace those mortuaries or upgrade it. So if it's upgraded, then we'll be doing it where they are. Okay.
Last question then, that I need. The last time I checked, we had 25% vacancy rate. How much of that are you intending to fill in the current time?
If the 25% vacancy rate in the National Department of Health, our personnel budget has increased by about 24 million, but our goods and services has been cut. So overall, within the economic recession and the smaller resource envelope, we have to reprioritize within the department. So that, because currently we cannot afford our personnel structure, we've got a number of unfunded posts that are vacant. So we're going through an exercise of looking at work function and re-looking at the whole organizational structure of the department in order to reprioritize and restructure to fit in within the resource envelope of personnel. So our rates may go down because we'll be abolishing the unfunded posts, but it doesn't mean that our personnel numbers will be going up. Okay. And Mr. Brown will be very proud of us doing that.
As long as you don't think that negative, Mr. Brown.
Thank you. Now let me put you on the point that were asked in relation to what the suggested response. Let me respond to that. Mr. Rudy, I mean, you raised the issue and the impact on services of health within your province, coming from another kind of province. What we're looking at when we're going to review the formula is the issue around the utilization rate within a facility. Is it? So once we can determine that, then irrespective of where the person comes from, we can link it to that specific facility and make the allocation there. We hope that will solve the problem, but we need to then put systems in place within the health itself to be able to determine those utilization rates and all of that. So we will be improving targeting. Mr. Mashilo, you raised a question two questions. Let me just make sure that I've got the right question. I think you raised something on training health professionals, right? The problem that you have is not necessarily the allocation mechanism, but how can we change the grant in such a way that we put a condition in so that once the person is trained, the person remains within the province. Your concern is you train people in Mpumalanga through this grant, but the benefits are external to Gauteng because they then get those benefits and people move there. So possibly what we need to look at is when people are trained through that specific process, that through internship or through retention process, like in your normally bursary thing that you have, they just say once you've received training through this particular process, it is expected from you to stay there and deliver a service within the province for a specific period of time, could be an option that can be explored to deal with it. On the engineer side, and I'm going to be blunt, public works is useless, Mr. Mashilo. I'm sorry to say. I'm sorry to say. If they are here, they can kill me on my way to the airport. Whenever services are rendered by public works, there's delays, there's cost overruns, right? And, you know, I can show you, if I can get that budget statement from Gauteng Education, the schools that were built by the Department of Education in Gauteng themselves cost 25 million. The schools that were built by Public Works cost 70 million, exactly the same schools. So the sector says these people are.
So this is like going to be the third attempt to get everyone to work together towards a goal. And when we discussed with National Treasury, not National Treasury alone, but it was Cabinet and even Mincombat that does the processing of all of this. these realities emerged, that we need to look at all of these things together and act jointly. So the allocation, as it was accepted, was we is flexible. We can do most of the things that are going to say we are the initiator, we are the facilitator, we are the coordinator, we are the catalyst. So if there is a need for us to initiate on the building of roads, we will do that, but we will call everyone to the party. So that is one of the things that we have had to do. And you will see from the strategic plan some of the initiatives, province by province, of what the type of things that we have had to do in that regard. And then on the second question, which relates to prioritization of this rural development, I think the response has been that this rural development is sitting in so many functions. There is no ring fencing of the allocations of the amounts that are there for rural development. I think the Minister of Finance at one time in his announcement said there was 6 billion rand, which will actually address the rural programs. They sit in provincial allocations and municipalities. So that amount is not clearly ring fenced. You cannot say it's like this one here. So the allocation that is to the Department of Rural Development is not a total amount of what this nation spends on rural development. It is only an indicative amount for fast-tracking the implementation of the Comprehensive Rural Development Program. So it's just an indicative amount. It does not reflect a total spend on rural development. If you're going to do that, you would have to do a detailed analysis of what sits in the various budgets. Then the issue of the program for restitution figures. It is true that restitution, we have settled about 96% of the claims that were lodged. There were 79,696 claims that were lodged. 96% of those claims have been settled. Now, we are left with about 3,000 land claims which are rural. Now, those are very, very expensive claims. Just to give you an indication, one claim in Mpumalanga, in Malamala, it has got a game reserve, a landing strip for Air Link in Malamala with a tourists that are attracted from overseas, where it's 12,000 rand per night paid in dollars. So it's a very costly property. It costs about 800 million to settle that land claim. That's one claim. In KwaZulu-Natal, near Stenga, there is one claim which has got sugarcane estates. We've combined all of those. And actually, that claim is to be settled for about 600 million. That's just one claim of a community that was removed there. So I'm just indicating to you that the remaining 3,000 claims, which are rural, are very expensive. They sit on sugarcane estates, on forestry plantations, on mining land, livestock land, and so. Some of those claims are very, very expensive. We are sitting with a lot of challenges from court where we have agreed in principle with the claimants about how that claim is going to be settled, and with the farmers that we need to buy their farms because they have been gazetted. But now it's very difficult to pay for all of those claims at once. So there are these demands, court demands, for us to pay for those claims. And the money is a big challenge, and Treasury is very much aware, because when they put these demands, they actually fight Treasury in those demands for these claims. So this matter of restitution is a critical matter. The allocation is clearly inadequate, especially given these realities that you can even quantify these claims. We have interacted with National Treasury, the budget team of National Treasury. They are very much aware of this. So the point I'm making is that we still have a challenge around restitution. The answer that we've got with National Treasury is that we had allocated about 4 billion rand for land acquisition, either through redistribution, land tenure programs, as well as the restitution land acquisition. So that the allocation of that budget was that it was going to be on a sliding scale for restitution, because claims were going to be finalized, and then on an increasing scale on the redistribution, because it would increase the number of hectares bought. But the reality is that the land for both programs has become so expensive in the recent 3 years, 4 years. The land prices have been so high that we have had to review this year. We are reviewing our stance to say, perhaps we should not be chasing hectares. We should also be talking to the quality of those transfers. Hence, this year, out of that budget, we have put aside 25% to address the recapitalization and development of those programs. So I'm just saying that we have had to stop and reflect and say what becomes our approach and what becomes our balancing act between redistribution and restitution, using the full budget of 4 billion in total, 1 billion for restitution and 3 billion for redistribution. And then the last one of the co-funding, the link of IDP and alignment, I think I've tried to respond to that. Perhaps Treasury can respond to this question of grants sitting in various departments, and yet this department may be responsible for those grants. And our own view is that we are a coordinating department. If those departments can commit, we don't mind the grants being with them, as long as they come to the party with the grants. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll respond to some of the questions, and my colleagues from EFSA will also respond to some. Chair, I will start with the role of the Department of Energy and the support that we give to municipalities, and the fact that municipalities, normally when you talk energy issues, especially rural municipalities, why they would most of the time associate themselves with Eskom or ask questions to Eskom. It is the nature of the industry, Chair. If you recall just after 1994, the way the electricity industry was basically structured, most rural municipalities or in the former homeland, they were then their electricity distribution in those municipalities was amalgamated, and the responsibility to service those municipalities was then given to Eskom. So therefore, in all rural municipalities in South Africa, Eskom is the distribution license holder. And when you go deeper into rural areas, Eskom is basically now responsible to provide the electricity service. So as a generator, they will transmit and even go to the distribution business. So the engagement between the municipality when they need specific services, especially electricity services, will basically be with Eskom. But also, if the municipality wants to deliver a service, let's say they want electrification of a specific area, their grant for those rural municipalities is on the Schedule 7 and is gazetted, and the municipality, they will know about that specific allocation. Now, how do we disseminate the information to these municipalities? Annually, the department, together with Eskom, we hold workshops in all provinces, and these municipalities are invited, and they get explained about the allocation. All these allocations that has been gazetted, we explain to them that this municipality has got this much allocation, and this is this is the number of connections which will be done in those municipalities. And then on monthly basis, Eskom will then report to those municipalities, because they are a service provider to that rural municipality. So that is why
most of the time their engagement is with ESCOM. In terms of us as a department providing service to providing assistance to municipalities, now you have get a situation where the municipality, it has got two portions. It has got its town where they have a license, but the outer part of the area, the distribution side of the business, is basically being handled by ESCOM. So in terms, you find that they actually receive, they will have two allocations. They will have a Schedule 6 allocation for their area where it's the expansion of the town, maybe new houses which are being built. But in areas where it's the rural part of the same municipality within the same municipal boundary, ESCOM is also has allocated funding for the electrification of those areas. But how do we put it together? The department then monitors both the implementation of both those programs. So the municipality, in terms of a Schedule 6 allocation, they will report to the department. In terms of a Schedule 7 allocation, ESCOM will report to the department, but also give a report to the municipality to say, in terms of the work that we do, this is basically what is happening. And all this, it's within the law, and that's what they have to do. So our role in terms of assisting that municipality with a license would basically, I've indicated on the mitigation strategies, the regional energy officers, they are basically the departmental employees. These are normally electrical engineering technicians and some are engineers who sort of, they can only assist in the planning and monitoring of a project. They cannot, most of our delays on electrification is not that much on the execution. It is the 4 to 5 months of the procurement process. That is where we basically lose time. On the execution, there is sufficient 4 to 5 or 6 months for construction, but most of the time on our municipal program, we lose time during the procurement of services by the municipality, and the department cannot get into that process of procurement at the municipal level. So that is the... in terms of the backlog, the original backlog, honourable member, I think if you talk of the original backlog, when we were talking about 1994, 30% access during that time, I think the more or less the number of households in South Africa, I think it was about 8 million. Since that time until now, we have about 12 million households in South Africa. So, and when you talk electrification figures, the amount of work that has been done from that time until now, we have just electrified over 4.5 million. So you can see technically, if you would look at it from that sense, that we would have easily have reached universal access. But the growth, the amount of households that have emerged, and those in deep rural areas, have actually not been penetrated. In the urban environment of our country, when you look at the backlog, we have actually reached universal access, and I will qualify my statement. When you look at the Western Cape, we don't have backlog anymore in terms of formal household. There's no backlog. The only backlog that is here is all informal settlements, and majority of that is in the city of Cape Town and in Mossel Bay. That is where majority of the 191,000 houses is. So what we are basically doing now, and we'll be having the meeting with the province and the municipality in terms of coming up with a strategy on what are we going to do with this, because the only application for electrification that we get from this province is one is just extending improving their bulk infrastructure to cope with the growth. Number two, it is new houses on a plan. So basically in this province, we are planning on a plan. So they will tell us we are going to build 1,000 houses next year. Please make a subsidy for 1,000 houses available. In October, they say, sorry, the we could not build 1,000. We have built 500. So take away the subsidy but make it available for next year. So you can see that's how we basically do electrification. In Gauteng, I have engaged with the city of Tshwane, and they have given me a letter to say, in terms of the backlog, the only backlog that is there is informal settlements in Atteridgeville and Mamelodi. So their backlog is basically housing. So they don't have a backlog. They actually had a project. They cancelled it because they said no. They are going to come up with a breaking new ground project, and we must fund that project. So that is basically. So our main backlog is in now deep rural areas. The cost per connection there is close to 14,000, 15,000, and that is in the Eastern Cape and the KZN. Those are existing areas. Now, to get to that, it is the challenge of building the bulk. So that is where majority of our backlog is. So to answer your question, yes, we do have almost statistically about 3 million households. If you take most of that out, which is mainly informal settlements in Gauteng, mainly in Gauteng and the Western Cape and some other small towns, you realize that in terms of the backlog, that has basically reduced. And what we will be doing going forward is mainly integrating with housing when there's new development. The 12% reduction that the department has committed on. Honourable Member would recall that at the time, the maximum demand, national maximum demand for Eskom was 37,000 megawatts, and our generating capacity was just above 40,000 megawatts. So we were basically trading very close to the generating capacity there, therefore reducing our reserve. So now today's figures that I've received from Eskom is that in terms of the national consumption, they have saved about in the maximum demand 2,000 megawatts, which is just an equivalent of about 3 units when you have to build a power station. And then for the next 3 years, the plan is to save another about 2,000 megawatts. Now, of course, the debate can be whether the reduction was as a result of the savings or was because of the economic crisis, and that can then be debated where we will then the consumption has decreased, and then the figures can then be put on the table. The sufficient power for 2010, I think there is a commitment from both the local municipalities and as well from Eskom. The plans are in place to be able to ensure that there is sufficient energy for 2010. The stadium currently, in terms of the pitch and the lighting, will be running on a separate energy source, which is the requirement from FIFA that they must run from an independent genset away from the grid. So in that regard, I think we will be ready for the 2010. In terms of the research on wind and turbine solar, the technology about wind and solar is at this stage is not a matter of mainly research. The technology exists. We know that the technology is there. We know what a solar panel can do. What it is basically, what has to happen is that now you must take the technology and match it now with the area where you want to put it. That is basically what needs to happen. That's one part. But another thing is that the introduction of renewable energy as part of the energy mix is what the country is striving to go to. And therefore, it means that we need to create a market for that energy and an acceptable tariff and so on. Then that is exactly what the department is doing now, to ensure that there will be a market for renewable energy, to ensure that there will be a proper trading, there will be a proper tariff and things like that. So on the research part, I think that has already been done. What has to happen is that it is the introduction of those alternative sources of energy as part of our energy mix. And as part of the departmental strategy, that's what we are basically working on, to ensure that the people who are coming up with a solar distributed generation, how will they access the market and so on. The energy efficiency amount in the Free State and Mpumalanga. Members must also recall that prior to the introduction of this grant, Eskom has also was also doing some energy efficiency projects. So, if you see in some areas where you find that we are not actually targeting that, we find that the issues of CFLs and energy efficiency campaign and so on, Eskom would have maybe in some instances have done some of those projects before. So that's why you would see that we would not maybe be targeting an area which has already have some CFLs before and so on. So in terms of this specific one, we targeted those that the program that will be coming with, if they have already have CFLs and so on, so we don't have to go back to the same area and do and change the CFLs. That is why the allocation. I'll allow Mr. Sokopo to deal with the issue of 12%. The debt that is owed to Eskom. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe before that, I don't know if yourself, would you rather talk to that the backdrop on the certification of things.
Yes.
I know that guy is asking. I am quite a
Thank you, Chair. I'll be the relevant person to answer that. We have concluded the electrification of clinics with the grant that was allocated to us. I think it's a year ago, and the grant for the electrification of schools. I think the electrification should the due date was the end of March this year. And in terms of our plan, that was what was going to basically happen. We have on the construction side, we had some challenge when we're building some of the lines to this school, to the mainly the schools and so on. So we have revised the target to June this year, that the Eskom in terms of the work that they do, they would then try to complete those. We also had schools and that were electrified using the photovoltaic technology, the solar system. And a majority of those schools we have electrified. We only had a challenge about the MUD schools and the schools which, in terms of the Department of Education, they have indicated that school they were going to demolish or are going to make it part of another school. So those ones we could not electrify because they are going to demolish the school and move it to another school, or it's a MUD structure and the same challenge happened. But on monthly basis, we are engaging with the Department of Education to ensure that those schools that they said we need to electrify, we then electrify. In terms of the clinics, the last time I know that we electrify all the clinics, and a letter was written from our DG to the DG at Health to indicate that all clinics that were eligible for electrification that they have identified, we have electrified. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Chair, I would like to then now speak about the Eskom bulk debt. And once you start talking about that subject, you only say people must put on their safety belts. But if you still would ask me, do I sleep at night? I mean, my question would be yes. I've seen the West. And what is there currently is really something that we can manage. Just to give the committee a feel, Chair, the debt, the management of the debt in the first place. In terms of Section 41 of the MFMA, we report to Treasury on a monthly basis in respect of the entire debt. That will be the bulk debt, and that will be the debt on FPE, which is sort of minimal. On top of that, between ourselves, Treasury, NERSA, and COCTA, we jointly, on a monthly basis, then now look at the debt, because I give them reports on a monthly basis. And we look at problem, what we call problem municipalities. And we call those municipalities to COCTA to try and ensure that they pay and make payment arrangements. So we manage this jointly with them. That is why I was saying, Chair, then now I can at least sleep at night. The problem is that the municipalities at the moment, in fact, you will pick up the trend in respect of those that are defaulting, is that they use the equitable share to settle the debt, which is not consistent with the requirements of their license. Because in terms of their license, the electricity account must be ring-fenced, and they should be able then now to religiously pay ESCOM out of that ring-fenced account. As a result, then now, the general pattern is that a municipality then now will default for 2 or 3 months waiting for their equitable share to come. And once the equitable share comes, then they settle the debt. In December, Chair, the total outstanding debt was 129 million. And the latest report that I have is the January report. The February report, we should be having it next week. There was a great improvement in the January report. The debt came down to about 99 million. The biggest culprits, Chair, you will find them mainly in Northwest Province. You will find them in the Free State. And you find that then now it's sort of the same culprits. You can always, you know, anticipate and expect them. But you don't have a situation where then they don't pay. You have a situation where the debt even moves to over 90 days at times. But then now when they come, they settle it. Let me give you the picture, Chair, of what I'm trying to say. Given the January figure of 99 million, looking at the aging of the debt, what sat between 31 and 60 was about 29.04 million. What sat between 61 and 90 was 32.02 million. And what was just over 91 days, Chair, was 26.73 million. That's why I say in the course of our business, then now, once you've got those type of figures that, you know, are still manageable, then now you can say to yourself, okay, we can sleep at night, especially with the partners with whom we are managing this whole aspect. On a regular basis, we do visit the municipalities, we do visit the mayors of the municipalities, as well as the provincial governments, to make them aware of the problems that we are having, because the last thing that we don't want to do is to start switching off from municipalities. What we want to do then now, we want to make sure that then now these are managed effectively, and they are kept then now within acceptable levels. Chair, I do not want to name and shame municipalities here, because the reason for doing that is because recently we received a request under the Promotion of Access to Information Act from a crowd calling themselves the National Tax Union, and they wanted this information. But we proudly together, after consulting with Treasury, after consulting with COCTA, then we jointly said, this information, you know, it's information about third parties. We must protect it and make sure that then now we don't destabilize municipalities. As a result, then now we haven't given that information. We have responded to say, no, we cannot give the information, and then I will wait with what is happening. So in general, Chair, what I'm saying is that between ourselves and our government partners, then now the debt as at end of January, it was 99.5 million. And we are managing that. We will see what February brings us.
Thank you very much. I would request, if you allow me, that I'm told there's a signal line that we break for 20 minutes. And we will immediately at 25 minutes. I'm targeting that we finish at least at 4. Do you agree? Thank you. So maybe we may now break for you.